Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Champions League nights on Off the Ball. Bigger than Zlatan's ego. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Barcelona, PSG, Leipzig against Liverpool. That is the menu this evening. If you're just tuning in, Liverpool fans, and didn't catch the team, Jurgen Klopp has gone with Henderson and Ozan Kabak as his central defenders this evening, with Trent and Robertson fullbacks. Midfield is Curtis Jones with Wijnaldum and Thiago, and then front three, as usual, Mane, Firmino and Salah. Meanwhile, Barcelona against PSG is at the Nou Camp. It's Pochettino versus Koeman. Neymar is out. There is hope he'll make the second leg on March 10th. He has a thigh injury. Verratti has overcome a hip injury to play. For Barcelona, Piqué, he's only trained for the last 5-6 days, but he starts in defence. Their midfield is Frenkie de Jong, Busquets, and the wonder kid that is Pedri, who I'm looking forward to seeing properly this evening. Just 18 years of age, seems to be the real deal. And then up front, it's Dembele, it's Griezmann, and it's Messi, who in his last 10 games has scored 11 goals. He seems to be feeling good about life again. Philippe Auclair, evening.
Good evening to you. I was just laughing when you just gave those statistics. It's just ridiculous, isn't it?
I think we're immune to them. I don't know what he would have to do to stop
us anymore. I don't want to be immune. I want to be vaccinated against this kind of... feeling that it's normal what Lionel Messi is doing. What he's doing is totally out of this world. Extraordinary, really.
You do have to say to yourself, this isn't normal. This isn't normal. 11 goals in 10 games. This isn't normal.
And those goals, and when you see them, they're just not just any goals. They're very special, very important goals too.
Yes. Well, I don't know, did you see on Twitter earlier on, Gary Lineker retweeted it, if anybody wants a look, but UEFA, I presume it was, put together a compilation of all the goals Messi has scored in this round of the knockout stages, the round of 16 goals. And honestly, it's a career reel for any other player. The quality of just so many of the goals is insane.
Well, it is, what can you say? I was thinking of another compilation, which is goalkeepers' reactions to being beaten by Lionel Messi. I don't know if you've seen this one. It's very entertaining. What happened to me? What just happened right now? No, honestly, we're dealing with levels of ridiculousness, which are, ridiculousness of sublimity, really, which haven't been reached by anybody for such a, over such a long period of time. What can you say? He is the greatest. There is no doubt about that.
To chart recent history between these pair, they've met a few times in the knockout stages. Barcelona have knocked out PSG on the last three occasions, the 2013 quarterfinals, the 2015 quarterfinals, and in 2017, in the last 16, that insane 4-0 defeat in Paris, followed by the 6-1 at the Nou Camp. So they've generally been pretty decent games. We're diminished on the 2017 batch.
Yes, I mean... It's very strange because these are actually three very different ties. If we're talking just about the game, which which was basically face to face, not group games, which don't matter. But you had the one which was 2013. Is that right? With Laurent, when Laurent Blanc was the manager, and you thought PSG was so close, and actually they just went out on goals which had been scored on the other's pitch. Then they were completely spanked 2 years later. And then there was 2017, which is, in Paris Saint-Germain's history, probably the most traumatic, if you can use such a word, such a dramatic word for a football club. But certainly is an occasion that they haven't forgotten. And to be honest, which has haunted them ever since. And extraordinarily enough, Neymar was on the pitch that night, but he was on the pitch for the wrong team, i.e. Barcelona, and scored twice in that particular game. And everybody remembers that game. I mean, it's one of those defining games of a club's history in the case of Paris Saint-Germain. And one of the big questions is the impact, the psychological impact it had on the whole generation of PSG players. How have, can they get rid of it? And when you look at it, you think, I was looking at the starting 11 tonight, which is has got, by the way, a couple of surprises in it, or interesting choices, shall we say. There are only two players in that team who took part in that 1-6 defeat, i.e. Marquinhos in central defence, and who am I? Am I forgetting? Yeah, Marco Verratti. How can I forget? Marco Verratti as well, who is going to play a different role tonight. Only two players out of 11 actually took part in that a very, very difficult defeat, 6-1 to Barcelona, but, which, by the way, still feeds a number of conspiracy theories on the Paris, in the Paris camp.
The last time we saw Barcelona in Champions League action, they lost 3-0 to Juventus. Yep. Since then, though, an upturn in their form. They have lost just one of their past 18 games, and I mentioned Messi's rejuvenation. What of PSG and Poch? I know they have 8 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss, and they're second in the table, but that doesn't really tell me what I need to know. Well, how's Poch doing?
He's doing okay. He's doing well, I think. He's perhaps not doing as well as people would like him to do, or were hoping he would do. The results are good, apart from a reverse against Lorient, which was really a very poor game, a 2-3 defeat in the league. Absolutely horrible. They found the going pretty difficult at times. They haven't been very fluid or fluent. Again, last weekend when they won against Nice, I mean, who are a tough-ish opponent. They only won 2-1. They were not entirely convincing. Perhaps they already had an eye on this particular fixture. You're not seeing the kind of PSG that you would imagine that Mauricio Pochettino could put together at this stage. He's not achieved with PSG what he achieved with Tottenham yet. Completely different situation. He had to find a new balance within the team, and I think he's starting to find that. He's starting to find a few answers to the questions that were in everybody's mind, in terms of the midfield in particular. But we're not seeing a great PSG. We're not seeing a PSG that is functioning to the utmost of its capacities and its huge potential. And there are many, many excuses for that. I mean, they had a very, very tough beginning to the season. They basically had no pre-season. There was all the situation between Leonardo and Tuchel. There have been a number of injuries. Again, tonight, they're missing two key players in Angel Di Maria and Neymar. But they've had this kind of injuries throughout the season. But Pochettino is, you know, slowly finding his fate. He's only just arrived in this team, and he's not at the point of his stay within the club at which you would expect him to have already found a formula that works for absolutely everybody. He's still chopping and changing with tactical systems, 4-3-3-4, 4-2-4, 3-1-2, 4-2-3-1, and so on. He's trying. But I think there is a feeling that he's on his way to find the right formula. And he didn't seem, I would say, unconfident. There is no such word, but I'll use it, before this particular clash with Barcelona, even if he actually stressed the fact that the Barcelona we're talking about today, as you said, is not the Barcelona of a few months ago when people thought that Ronald Koeman was a no-no and had been a failure at the club.
Thomas Tuchel's arrived and done very well at Chelsea and instantly found a solution to some of the issues that Frank Lampard had. And clearly, when he talks about the game, I mean, I'm more exposed to him now than I was when he was at PSG. He's clearly incredibly tactically proficient and thinks about the game very technically. So these players are, you know, they, whatever about Tuchel's personality or whatever the issues were, they're used to a high standard of technical coaching.
Oh, yes.
I suspect it's a leaky club. Are they happy with Pochettino, do we know? Has he made a good first impression, or are they saying,
yes,
what?
Yes, he has.
He has, okay.
No, he has. He has, and I think most of the players are... I mean, they were not happy to see Tuchel go. The dressing room was split. That's what I've been told. In that some players were relieved a bit that he was going, and some players were a bit sad that he had gone. It was not a disaster. It was not a big emotional drama. And also, you know, Pochettino arrived with a reputation that, honestly, preceded him, and they're very happy to be under the orders of somebody who is so highly thought of in the game. Mm. And we know that Mauricio Pochettino is, in any case, a very fine manager. So that there's no question about that. So we're at a stage where, and when we cannot exactly gauge what the impact has been. And I think in many ways, that's one of the reasons why people are so intrigued by what is happening tonight, is that it will be one of the very first moments when we will see what the impact has really been. Because normally you would have said that, for example, of the Clásico against Marseille, but Marseille is in such a rut at the moment, in such a poor state that you can't put any judgment on what Pochettino is doing because of a victory in that particular game. And the other games as well, you could think, yeah, okay, he's just trying to find his feet. No, tonight is a big one. It's a really, really big one. Because he will also be judged in comparison with what Tuchel achieved with that particular team, which is to bring them to the very first Champions League final, which they lost by not very much in the end. So I would say that many of the questions you're asking me right now, we probably will have the answers tonight, but in about 3 hours' time. Well, I know that's a cop out.
No.
We can look at things and see the fact that he's got Leandro Paredes, who is now one of his key players in midfield. That's important. The fact that he's decided that Moise Kean, who had a good game against Nice at the weekend, when the rest of the team was a little bit of color, really, and he decided to keep him when Sarabia was thought by many to be favoured. That's an important and strong choice. So he's making strong decisions at PSG. And I do think that they're accepted by absolutely everybody. I mean, it's just that they thought, some people thought in Paris that Tuchel was a bit of a dead weight, strangely enough, and was actually preventing the club from going forward. Of course, that wasn't the case. And they're now realizing that maybe they were too hard with Tuchel. And I do hope that it will help them be a little bit softer on Pochettino as he's trying to find his way.
Hmm. How much stock do you make in talk of this Barcelona comeback, one defeat in their past 18 games?
I'm always dubious because I listen a lot to what my Barca friends are saying. Got quite a few friends who are actually socios or socis, to talk in Catalan, and who are all telling me that it is despondency and despair, but clearly that's not the case. And as Pochettino himself said, and I'm talking about Koeman, is that judgments have been made about the way Koeman was leading this particular team very, very quickly, as if, again, he was supposed to arrive in what was... my goodness, what a mess of a club. And it is still a mess of a club, to be honest, with the elections coming as well. And supposed to find an answer straight away because he had been a legend when he was a player. And of course, that's not the case. But he's been given time. And interestingly enough, when you look at the comments that I see about Barcelona, about the way they play, about their fragility at the back, about their lack of speed, rhythm, inventiveness, and so forth, I think this discourse has changed slightly. It's partly due to the fact that you've got players like Pedri who suddenly have appeared and have imposed themselves and are obviously creating, quite a stir and a lot of hope, actually, in those ranks. But the discourse has changed and nobody sees them, I think, as the soft touch that they were supposed to be or the softer touch that they were supposed to be in the autumn.
Yes.
So,
It's going to be very interesting. I mean, you think back to that Bayern Munich defeat and it just felt like end of era. Well, we're not, this thing could go up completely in smoke. So they're back here again and there's talk of rejuvenation and there's Pedri, which seems very exciting and less of an old man vibe. And yet, it could so easily go up in smoke again. So that's where we are. That's why tonight's such a great game.
Yes, and I mean, obviously, and it's a special opposition. Even when I talk about opposition, it's an interesting one because it's in a position that PSG has never dominated. So I think we're going to gauge where each of these clubs is at the moment by what is happening tonight. And obviously what is happening in the return game, but tonight feels very, very important and very significant. We will have, if Barcelona have a convincing victory over PSG, which I think would be what most people would expect, given the absentees on PSG's side. People will say, well, you know, Koeman has steadied the sheep. The ship. Has steadied the ship. And, you know, he has a way forward and we've got to count on them. If Pochettino, you know, does something special at Barcelona, people say, well, that's it. It is the start, the real start of the Pochettino reign. I probably warmed up the seat for a 1-1 draw or 2-1 home win, which will mean nothing, yes, and which will be able to read absolutely nothing. But it does feel like an important moment in both club season. Yes, absolutely.
Something very inconclusive coming our way now. A very last word. Hard to know what to expect from Liverpool this evening.
I expect a reaction. I don't share the doom and gloom approach that many people have had about Liverpool. And I'm not a Liverpool fan. I'm not a Red. But I think people have been a little bit on the harsh side, perhaps, in this period of turbulence for Liverpool. And I wouldn't be entirely surprised if they surprised us by a good performance against RB Leipzig tonight.
Okay, we shall see. Filippo, it was a pleasure. Enjoy the football this evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Filippo Clerc with us ahead of Champions League kickoffs at 8 o'clock. We'll obviously keep you updated throughout the night, not least on the football show between 9 and 10, our football coverage on Off the Ball. With thanks to Paddy Power, you can get information on responsible gambling by visiting gamblingcare.ie.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Champions League nights on Off the Ball. Bigger than Zlatan's ego. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome along to the football show. So lots of good stuff for you. Later on this hour, we'll talk to Nicky Bandini about Serie A, where the Milan derby is on this weekend. It's first against second. Juventus in action tomorrow in the Champions League. They're in fourth. Antonio Conte's escaped punishment for giving the Juventus president the finger. And of course, there was the Lukaku's Zlatan tussle a couple of weeks ago. So Nicky Bandini will join us and fill us in on everything. It's second half just starting in Leipzig, where it's nil all between Liverpool and Leipzig. Liverpool, a lot of good chances in that first half, but nothing to show for it. Meanwhile, two goals at the Nou Camp, where it's one goal apiece between Barcelona and PSG. Messi, who has scored, by the way, now 12 goals in 11 games, scored a penalty. Excuse me. And Kylian Mbappe scored the equaliser after 32 minutes. So we're still 1-1 second half starting at the Nou Camp. Dan McDonald back with us evening.
Evening, Joe. How are things?
Very well. So we've a few bits to get through. We should start with the Champions League coverage in RTE this evening. Damien Duff, obviously, as he has been for some time, is an analyst. He was alongside Richie Sadlier and Darren Maloney was there. Needless to say, Dan, first question was about Damien Duff's decision to step away from the Irish setup. So let's have a listen.
Well, listen, Dara, I appreciate that you have to ask, but I don't really have a lot to say in the matter. I know I've made the right decision because not one day has passed where I've regretted it. I know it's not ideal for the manager, but at the same time, I guess it's a chance for him to bring in a better coach than me. He's done it already on the goalkeeping side. He's brought in Dean Kiely, a great guy. He'll bring a great energy to the squad and a top coach who's obviously coaching at the top level in the Premier League every week. And at the end of the day, the only person that's lost out really is me by walking away. You're soon forgotten, so staff, players, I'm sure they don't have a problem with it now. It's all water under the bridge. I've given up because I've walked away. The chance to represent my country, which is a massive, massive honour. The chance to coach elite players, which doesn't come around very often. And I've probably lost a lot of focus as well, which a lot of ex-players will tell you need that in your life. So, but listen, I felt strongly about things and I would have been unhappy with myself if I stayed. Mm. Simple as that.
Okay, no, look, you're uncomfortable talking about yourself in this manner, but you can understand why people wanted to know why you were leaving.
Yes, I do. I'd be the same. I know football people want to know, but at the same time, I'm uncomfortable talking about it now, but I just want to keep it private. And even when you guys asked me, you know, 2 weeks ago to do the show tonight, you told me then, oh, we're going to have to ask you. And I was like, oh, really? But listen...
Yes, really.
But I can't hide away me house forever because I've left the FAI. No way. And people will say, you know, I've let my country down. I've let nobody down here. I'll continue to dedicate myself to Irish football in a different capacity by coaching young players and improving young players, hopefully improving myself as well. But all I've ever done since I wore the Irish shirt from 14, under 15, is dedicate myself to Irish football, and I've never let my country down, and I'll continue to work for Irish football in a different way.
Okay. He ain't giving us nothing.
It didn't really clear. You couldn't describe it as Damien Duff clears things up about his Irish exit, could you? No. I don't think you could put that. You couldn't put that headline on it. You know, and there's probably enough there, as we've discussed this topic before, for everyone to take away the interpretation they want to take away from it to some degree. Mm. But it was light on detail. And listen, you know, TV Joe, you know, like, I don't know what sort of time constraints they were under in terms of the discussion and the debate. But I don't think it's unfair to say you would have liked to hear one or two more questions. But, you know, there but for the grace of God and all of that. You don't know what the sort of situation was with that. But I suppose there's one or two things you probably would have wanted to directly ask, I would say. And if Damien Duff ever goes down that road again and appears somewhere or other, and I don't think he really needs to do that. You know, he's not someone who's going to be doing promotional gigs just for a few quid. That's not really his style, to be honest. But there'd probably be a more direct line of questioning taking on certain stuff, I would have thought.
Yeah, I would think considerable time pressure and also an added pressure to preview this game, which they're on to show, and Liverpool fans will be really into. I know you would argue Irish fans are more interested in Damien Duff than they are, but there would still be a sense that, well, we have to do some kind of coverage of the game. And also, I would think they have talked about this a bit before going on air. And based on what he said just there, Damien Duff would have made it very clear to everybody at RTE, I'm not answering these questions. I'm not going into it. You can ask me over and over again. I'm not doing it. So it's up to you guys. You can keep asking me. So I'd say it was a difficult situation all around. And, you know, maybe there's a duty of care to somebody that you're employing as well, who's saying, look, I don't really want to get into this. Can you, you know, do you want to sacrifice your relationship with Damien Duff for the next year or two if you're the broadcaster? So it's tricky. It's very tricky. I mean, it's disappointing, though. You really would like him to just say what the issue was.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, yeah, and I don't know, like, would he have answered more? Maybe he would have, you know, but, like, we don't know. I suppose, yeah, like, I think he was so sort of deliberate to some degree in the words he chose that I don't think you could, like, I think you'd be putting too much stock on what was said to, like, to analyse it too much, you know, if you know what I mean. Oh, listen, like, you know, there's a couple of comments about bigging up Dean Kiely and whatnot. Like, it's I think it's reasonably well known at this stage that, like, he obviously had a bit of a fallout with Alan Kelly, and probably no love lost there.
Well, it was interesting. Probably, his wording was that, you know, Stephen Kenny will go out and get a better coach than me. He's already done that on the goalkeeping side of things with Dean Kiely. People are saying, "Whoa, well, that's, I mean, that is big." I think that was just the way the words flowed together, as opposed to a concerted effort to say Dean Kiely's a much better coach than Alan Kelly, by the way, you know.
It could be. Or, you know,
I think he was just making the point he's replaceable, and, you know, he'll probably get a better coach than me, and look, he's already got Dean Kiely in, and you can suddenly put it together the way it came out of his mouth, as if, you know, Duff shoots down quality of Kelly's coaching, and I think that would be a bit unfair.
I don't think he's shooting down the quality of his coaching, but, you know, he knows what he's saying too in his own way. You could sort of take things in your own way, but, like he has that way of, he has that delivery, Duff, doesn't he? Like, when he was on RT previously about the video gate thing, you know, he sort of speaks with the head down almost. And he says, you know, what was the reference previously about, you know, the video? Some people have a problem with that. And it's just left there in a particular way. That's just how he opts to do things. But, you know, he does feel, like, the one thing I would say is it obviously probably has bothered him, I think, the suggestion that he let people down, he let anyone down. I watch as Liverpool score here, that he's actually bothered anyone and let them down, you know, that he's let his country down. There has been some commentary to that end, so that clearly probably had irked him to some degree. And he did also suggest that obviously there were things that he felt about strongly, that he hasn't just walked away because he had another job lined up or something like that. Like, you know, it's sort of clarified he's definitely leaving on a point of his principles and what those principles are and what caused it. Clearly, he wasn't happy with how certain things were handled.
Just in case anyone was ever under the illusion Dan McDonald's a Liverpool fan, he's obviously proven he's not this evening, the way he casually mentioned, oh, Liverpool have scored here. So they most certainly have away to Leipzig. 52 minutes on the clock. It's build up down the left-hand side. Oh, it's a Leipzig player who plays Mo Salah in. It's a really loose, almost blind pass to his defensive colleague. And it's not even an accurate pass because it goes in behind his defensive colleague. And who's there? Only Mo Salah. And he's coming in from the right-hand side. So he turns it onto his left foot. You think for all the world like he's going to hit it into the far corner, curl it into the far corner. Instead, he passes it straight into the near corner. Jurgen Klopp, fist bump. Liverpool 1-0 up and away goal as well. Calamity in the Leipzig defence. They concede a lot of goals, Leipzig, more than any other team currently in the knockout stages thus far in the competition.
Are you suggesting Nathan Murphy would have delivered that news with a bit more joy in his voice? He would have just like abandoned all, whatever it was, train of thought and going to comment. But I mean, like, I don't know, who do you have on that gets excited about Liverpool goals?
I suppose.
Clearly there's people on who do that. Who are those people?
Well, I mean, they would have given a degree more than Damien Duff said this. Liverpool have just scored a crucial goal in the knockout stages of the Champions League.
Well, I was actually just referring to something out the corner of my eye and trying to keep my train of thought, but I didn't realise it was going to be a commentary on the sort of slightly downbeat delivery of it. I apologise.
No, it's okay. So listen, look, on this Duff
professional
thing.
Professional, I think it's called, actually.
A professional. What a pro. What a pro. So listen, on this Duff thing, we can drag the backside out of this and analyse every word. The fact is, he has said nothing tonight, and so that's just really...
That's the fairest. You know what? I think you're probably right. We've managed to still get 5 to 6 minutes out of it.
Didn't even merit that.
But no, I think, as I said, the one thing I would say definitely, and I'm pretty sure that this will be borne out, like with the Ireland stuff over the last while, there's obviously been different views around certain things and stories. And I think people will take... You know, people will take from that what they want to take from it.
If you were of the opinion that Damien Duff was sorry to leave Stephen Kenny behind but just could no longer stand the side of the FAI, tonight does nothing to dissuade you of that view.
No, absolutely. But some people on the other side could say, well, he didn't come out and give the manager a strong backing, did he? So I can understand how someone could say that as well. Mm. You know, so like it's... But really, then you're going down the road of reading too much into words. He pretty much decided it was private and he wasn't going to go into it. But I'm sure at some stage in the future he probably will. And that might answer some of those questions. Everything else is probably theories or... as I said, there was some well-sourced information on how he was feeling about things, but obviously some people need to hear him say that stuff, and I understand that.
As in, people who think maybe there was a falling out with Stephen Kenny will still be able to say, well, he made a point of not backing Kenny in any great way.
That could be. You can see that. And then, you know, his issues with the FAI, like, you know, he did make some reference to he's left the FAI, but he continued to serve Irish football and all this type of stuff. But, like... Mm. And listen, like, Damien Duff is his own man. He very much is his own man. I think anyone who knows him, I wouldn't claim to know him at all. People who do know him would say that he's very much his own man. And I think he's taken a decision. I don't think a lot of other people would have probably left in the circumstances, but he's opted to do so. And, you know, listen, I'm sure he'll be back in some shape or form. Like, I don't think, you know, this is the end of hearing Duff and the discussion around the Irish team or anything like that. I think, yeah, there's a lot more to come in his football actual coaching journey, not just the punditry side of things.
Have you heard more about his decision since we last spoke about it, whenever that was, a couple of months ago?
In what sense? Like, just why he left?
Yeah, or what's happened to him?
No, I mean, I don't... Listen, I probably, like, you know, I've probably written a fair bit of stuff, and I've probably come round to the conclusion, I'm probably come round to... You know, various discussions with people and stuff, that I actually just don't think there's one distinct thing. I don't think there's one, like, this is the reason, you know, like, this is it, you know, this is like the smoking gun sort of piece of information as to why it was. And I think, you know, I don't think there was a big fallout with Stephen Kenny or anything like that. But at the same time, I don't believe it looks great for Stephen Kenny that he's left. And I think that's probably a fair point of view. As I tried to keep my composure as Liverpool race through on goal, score again. But I think that there's certainly layers to it. But I've no doubt, and listen, it's been reported widely, there's nothing unusual in saying it, that there was a dispute of sorts with Alan Kelly. And maybe he might have wanted that dispute even to be handled differently, I wonder. You know, there's certainly a feeling there that if Alan Kelly had left first, what might have happened. But really... I don't know. I'm not sure if I want to place too much stock into that, but that's certainly an opinion that exists out there, you know? Right. But it's like the long break.
I feel like Darren Maloney here, for God's sake.
I don't know because I honestly can't say something with absolute sort of stubborn, like, this is the reason confidence that I wouldn't claim to, because like, you know, because to be honest, like a lot of people, there's probably two versions. People have heard different things, different versions of events,
yeah,
of people, and people would say, and I think there was probably a combination of factors that I don't think, listen, there was no doubt he was not happy with Videogate and all of that. I think that's accepted by everyone, and that was bad. Like, the investigation shouldn't have happened in the way that it did. And that, I don't think that part of it really can be disputed by anybody. How that led to him actually eventually going, I mean, is there aspects of fallout he would have probably wanted handled differently from all sides? Possibly so.
Okay.
Possibly.
So you're hearing different things from different people, I'm guessing.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much so.
Yeah. Mane scored the second goal for Liverpool, 58 minutes. Again, just found himself. I mean, this is like kind of schoolboy stuff where he's got half the pitch wide open and he's just running through on goal and runs 20 metres with the ball and strokes it home. And that's that. So it's 2-0 Liverpool suddenly on the hour mark, which is an unbelievable result. And they're dominant. They're going at Leipzig in droves now. You guess, I presume Leipzig will feel they have to come out and score one tonight. So no better team than Liverpool to pick them off. Front three looking good form. I mean, this will be a quick way to salvage their season if they can have a run in the Champions League, needless to say.
Yeah, definitely so. I mean, there's no doubt, like, yeah, didn't see the build-up to the second goal like the first, when Leipzig have left themselves wildly exposed. You know, it looks like, when, do you know what, almost like Liverpool at Leicester at the weekend. You concede one, and then you lose your composure completely, and you concede another type of goal that you shouldn't concede in, like, a brief, you know, frantic spell of activity. But, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a bit of a weird when you say it's an away win, but it's obviously in Hungary. It's, like, not, say, your normal Champions League tie as such. You know, you've gone away to the Lions Den or something and got this big away win. But the nature of the knockout football and the firepower they have, you can see how, like, they've been a bit inconsistent of late, but when they've still produced good performances in the midst of an overall slump. So it can do something for them, and even just, like, you know, to take the heat out of the home aspect of it, you know, if they could even just come back with a cushion and just take some, so, you know, just, I don't know. It just feels like they just need to take the pressure out of situations generally. And even, like, this was felt like a quite a big game for them tonight. And if they can sort of get through this tie without too much stress and strife, it might just give them a chance to sort of, you know, just to take a breath and regroup a small bit and refocus.
Remiss me not to mention that James McLean is going to be on OTBAM tomorrow at 9 a.m. So that's well worth tuning in for. It'll be great to hear from him in the midst of this storm. Significant, Dan, that the PFA came out and supported him. I don't think they really did that before. Certainly not like this. The FAI came out as well. We touched on this in the news round. I guess this time around, it's very similar to what happened maybe a year ago when he was driving home from training and listening to, I think it was TalkSport, and heard much discussion about discrimination and the Black Lives Matter movement, and thought, well, I'm on board with all of that, but why is the discrimination that I've been subject to for the last 9 years of my career not talked about in terms remotely close to this? And he went on TalkSport and spoke about it. And a year on, somebody private messaged him saying, amongst other things, that they would burn, you know, don't make me burn your house down and everyone in it. And McLean has said, look, the Irish this and the IRA that are water off a duck's back, but the death threat stuff, it crosses a line. And again, he was just throwing it out to the public. Why is this not a scandal? And I think this time around he has had a more official response, I think.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, I do think it was probably this, you know, the statement by his wife Erin that probably even seemed to bring it to another level this time too. You know, she obviously put out a sort of a lengthy post yesterday, and that seemed to almost gain legs. And like that, listen, whether it's coincidental or not, you know, that statement came out before a lot of the other statements, you know, from sort of official organizations and even Stoke today and so on. So, I think probably provided a sort of a human side to it. Not that there hasn't been a human side to anything James McLean has said about it, but like James McLean's sort of I don't think he would have any problem admitting this. Like, he would obviously have a sort of a combative streak, you know, and what he's done often in the past is he's taken some abuse and he's reacted to it, and that's his probably way of dealing with it. And people obviously would deal with things in different ways. Whereas obviously what Aaron did, his wife did, was to probably, you know, detail the story behind it and, you know, what it's like for people at home who are probably, you know, trying to sort of interpret some of the, you know, the seriousness of some stuff that is said. Because I think we all know that, yeah, like there's loads of, you know, people who will just type stuff from behind a screen and stuff and be very brave in that format, you know, anonymously or whatever. But she did make the point in her statement that there was a particular game, you know, where someone had said, you know, they were going to bring a gun to this match. And, you know, she's sitting at home watching this game thinking, well, what if that person was right? You know, what if that person wasn't telling, you know, wasn't just sort of telling tall tales as such? Now, I'm sure, like, as much as you're rational and you think, no, that can't happen, that can't be true. Like, if it's easy for us to say that from this sort of remove here, thinking, no, no one would do that. If it's your husband, like, if it's the father of your three kids or whatever, then even if there's 1% of you thinking, well, actually, maybe that could happen. You know, can you imagine? Like, it's just not normal. And, like, this is, these are the threats that, or comments they're facing all the time, you know. And the one, the comment this week that sort of brought this on was someone saying, you know, I'll burn your house and everyone inside it. And again, you know, if you've got a young family and stuff, that takes on a very different sort of complexion, I suppose. And I think she was making the point that their kids are getting a bit older now. I'm not sure what age they are, but they're certainly, you know, they're sort of getting to the stage where obviously they'll, you know, if they heard a discussion or heard things said, they would very much understand it. And there comes a point where it probably has to stop. It's a strange one now at the moment, really, of course, because we have closed doors football for the last period of time. And like prior to that, we actually did have an attempt to address stadium abuse of James McLean, which is like every week. Like, I've been to games in England where like Millwall away and stuff, where it's just start to finish 90 minutes, just tirade aimed in the direction of a player. And there was, I think it was at Barnsley and maybe Huddersfield, that action taken against him. There was one game where I think he stops play before a corner just to highlight it. And obviously we've gone into this world now, obviously with no fans at the moment at games, but clearly it's continued. And it does appear that finally, you know, organisations who in the past just sort of probably turned a blind eye to it or certainly didn't actively engage with it are now suddenly realising we maybe should have been doing more about this over the years. This is not acceptable.
Hmm. Yeah, it's very tricky. What do you suspect if fans were back in stadiums and an entire stadium was chanting whatever about McLean could be done about it? This is different to, say, racist abuse, where if somebody was to scream a vitriolic racist comment, you would like to think that, one, that person would be massively in the minority, and two, that those around him or her would look at them with a degree of disgust, and so there would be a degree of social isolation, etc. Whereas nobody has the abuse that's been aimed at McLean remotely on the same level as that. So, you know, if thousands of people are doing it, I'm not quite sure what can be done.
Well, this is it. Like, I've unfortunately, as much as like I'm talking about how the awareness is there, you know, and people seem to be more conscious of it, I've no doubt if stadiums were back open again and, you know, James McLean was playing this weekend away at a championship ground of some description, I'm sure he would get comments that, you know, he would take as, you know, as, you know, sort of they meet the criteria for sort of, you know, for racist abuse or however you want to phrase it, you know, about his nationality or his religion or his background or however you want to interpret it. I know what you're saying. Like, you know, will there be other people saying, no, you can't do that? You know, that won't happen. Is there that way? I don't think so.
No, I'm not like, sure it's taboo yet, Dan, if you say
that. I don't believe it is at all, no. To be honest. Like, that's striking a negative tone. But I guess what we did see in the past, like, this went on for years with no consequences for anyone at all. Mm. Like, at all. Like, I'm thinking of the games I was at. Like, you know, it was just routine that this is what happens. Like, McLean, when he gets that abuse. And I think, like, Aaron touched on in our note, that there's almost, there was probably a degree of probably even officialdom thinking, well, you know, he's brought some of that on himself.
Yeah.
I think that could be the only explanation for it, really. That and people thinking, well, listen, you know, a few jibes about being a Paddy this or Irish that, whatever, that's not the same. That's probably the point. And also, probably, I think people also think that because someone can be combative and how they approach it, well, then ultimately you can't portray them as a sympathetic figure because they have this streak and he seems to like embrace it and bite back. But that doesn't change the tone and the nature of the comments that are actually being made. Like, it doesn't change the principle of someone anonymously sending threats to someone's house, you know.
Yeah, it's the death threat, which makes this suddenly far more serious, and that's why you think authorities should get involved. You know, it's one thing if he's getting F, you IRA so-and-so, you Fenian so-and-so, you Paddy, all that stuff, get out of our country.
Mm.
It's really grim. But then when death threats come into it, I mean, authorities have to get involved. They're duty-bound to get involved. It was interesting to see David Myler's tweet, and we mentioned this in the newsroom as well, but people may have missed it. So Myler had condemned the abuse that McLean has taken for years and said he was aware of it for years. And somebody replied to him on Twitter saying, why are you only speaking out now about this and not when you were playing? You knew he was going through this years ago. And Myler quote tweeted that question and said, honestly, I was afraid to get involved. I stood by and watched a friend and teammate get abused time after time and thought to myself, I don't want that aimed towards me and my family. Which was incredibly honest, because I think a lot of his teammates would be in the same boat there.
Yeah, I thought that I was very struck by the honesty there. And listen, it's something James McLean has previously addressed in the past, that he felt maybe that, you know, I think he pointed out that you know, some teammates of his were obviously quite active and say around sort of BLM or like sort of awareness of sort of issues pertaining to sort of racism and discrimination and posting stuff on their social media or whatever it might be. And that he'd never really had a public message of support from a teammate. And listen, I think that's a very valid point to raise, you know. And I've no doubt that a lot of people, for their own reasons, they didn't want their, as you say, they didn't want their family to be exposed to it. Potentially, you never know. Like, some players could have been thinking, could this have some kind of impact on their career? You know, because there was obviously some clubs who didn't want to sign James McLean and had to deal with a backlash from their fan base when they signed him or, you know, when they were linked with him because of that. And I was sort of thinking about this as well, particularly for Irish players, that like where a lot of the Irish players play, they're not necessarily playing with, say, you know, sort of the super clubs. We have a huge amount of players in London, you know, in those areas. And we have a lot of players, and this was probably where James McLean's issue started initially to some way. Like he didn't wear the poppy when he was at Sunderland, a club that sort of, the town itself has a sort of a link with the army. I think there was people even involved or around the club who had strong links to sort of, you know, the armed forces, and the relationship in certain parts of England would be, you know, and this, even the fan base and the association with sort of certain symbolism would be quite strong. And we'd have a lot of Irish players at clubs like that, you know. You sort of wonder, and this is just me off the top of my head, but like if you had an Irish player at someone like Liverpool, which obviously people talk about Liverpool as a very different, Liverpool even within England has a sort of a different attitude sometimes towards the rest of England. Like if an Irish player in a city with a real Irish background come out and explain their reasons and play for Liverpool, would they have had issues? I just wonder. I'm just speculating off the top of my head.
I think it's an interesting question.
Whereas a lot of the Irish players are at clubs where they'd have real issues if they went down that road.
Yeah, the profile of the clubs he's played at, I would suspect, communities still very much a part of the clubs, and they would have strong links to the military as well. Ardal O'Hanlon was on the show earlier, and he was saying, like, when you're over in England, you realise just the extent to which the relationship with the military is so strong, you know.
Mm.
And that's an issue too. And we shouldn't, it's remiss of us, by the way, not to say that McLean has made missteps along these 9 years. Now, he does not deserve death threats, and I don't think either he deserves the abuse he has received, even aside from death threats. But like his joke, the balaclava with the kids for homeschooling, and it was history.
Ah, yeah, that was it's
ridiculous.
Bad joke gone wrong.
It was a terrible idea, and understandably, there lots of people would find that deeply insensitive on his part. You know, like
I think that was probably an attempt. Like, in some respects, it was probably an attempt to an ironic aspect to it to some degree. You know, like he's almost becoming a caricature and probably, you know, sort of poking fun at his own reputation in a certain way.
But equally, you know, he's also been antagonistic lots of times in replies to people who absolutely have been antagonistic to him. And he might say, well, I'm not going to take it and say nothing. But it's fuel. It is fuel. And that's been part of the issue as well. Like, there are, you know, Nemanja Matic doesn't seem to attract the same level of scrutiny or attention. But the other thing, what I'd really say in McLean's defense about this whole Poppy thing is, you know, so Arda Lohanlon was on earlier, and he was making the point that, you know, social media is no place for nuance, which of course it isn't, and I agreed with him. I thought it was a very fair point to make. But McLean's reasons for not wearing the Poppy aren't rocket science either.
No. Like
they really aren't. This is not, you know, you need to study Irish history at length or read my 5,000-word dissertation on my reasons for not wearing the Poppy to even begin to understand my reasons. Like, you can kind of sum it up in a sentence or two, you know? Northern Ireland, British Army there, Bloody Sunday, it's where I'm from.
Yeah, Craig and where he's from.
You've like been up there, you did a great piece there. Yeah. Like, you can almost do it in bullet points, and, you know, that's just me. And why that hasn't had any truck. And so, you know, I've pointed out that he's made a few missteps. Equally, he's published an open letter where it eloquently, years ago at Wigan, expressed his rationale, you know, in a very respectful way. And that did him no good either, you know. So it's terrible that it hasn't managed to permeate the very thick skulls of so many people over there, because his reasons are very simple and they're fair enough.
Yeah, and the one thing I would say about, like, you say the letter at Wigan did him no good. I know what you mean, like, in terms of, say, stopping the abuse.
Yeah.
I do think, like, off the back of that, I think he probably does have a lot more. I think there's a certain amount of actual media support for him, I think, you know, and certainly in terms of football writers I would deal with in England and stuff, I think they're quite sympathetic. Now, that probably gets lost a bit because it's often the sort of news sections and the sort of, you know, the Daily Mail pieces or sort of versions or comment sections where a lot of the media anger, like, focuses.
I think most people are sympathetic to him. It's just, even a small minority in a country the size of England or the UK is still a lot of people.
Yeah, but also you made the point about Nemanja Matic, and that's like, I see where you're coming from, but he's also not Irish as well, and there's no doubt the fact that McLean being Irish and probably, like, you know, not being shy about his Irish Republican beliefs, people probably struggle to get their head around that being someone's belief, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the thing. But then they're not going to be that energized by the sort of the nuances of the situation in the Balkans. You know, when there's something about there's something about an Irish person who's not afraid to express, like, their Irish political views, that I think obviously that's a red rag to a bull to a lot of people.
No, it's true.
In the UK, you expect in some ways, like, they like their Irish people to be a bit more quiet about these type of things.
Yeah,
you know?
It's true.
And there's something in,
I keep referencing Arda Lohanlon, but he even mentioned, you know, Canary Wharf in 96. Like, that, he felt the effects of that in the aftermath. And so it's very different to Nemanja Matic, for sure. What about, by the way, Michael O'Neill in all this? He's his manager at Stoke. Obviously, he's going to know exactly, literally, where McLean is coming from. Has he said much?
No, do you know, probably not in recent times, but I recall him being quite supportive of him around the time when the stadiums were open and he effectively stopped the match. But, like, Michael O'Neill's sort of an interesting one. Michael O'Neill from Portadown, like, Michael O'Neill, you know, I'm not bringing religion into it, but obviously it's, you know, the sectarian language and stuff is part of the debate
Catholic,
here.
Yeah.
You know, like, Michael O'Neill, Catholic, for Northern Ireland, and, like, you know, when Michael O'Neill would have sort of started off as Northern Ireland manager, like, you know, I think there's a quite unified approach, obviously, to some degree in the Northern Irish team. But they've had issues there with, say, losing players to to the Republic, and it's a complicated one for Michael O'Neill, I'd say, because I'd love to know, actually. You'd love to have a proper chat with him, but I suspect the microphones would have to be away from it to fully get a handle on what he feels of everything McLean has had through the years, because there's layers to their relationship, because Michael O'Neill would have wanted to call James McLean up, I think, you know, for Northern Ireland. But obviously he'd just gone he'd gone with his heart at that stage. But I guess I'm dancing around it. I think Michael Neal would probably respect James McLean's opinions, but obviously has probably at times in his life, you know, he's probably had to deal with things in a different way.
As in James McLean, not pick that fight.
I think every Catholic player who's played for Northern Ireland to some degree has probably heard stuff that would be insulting to them, but obviously, you know, James McLean grow up in an area where, and like I've been to where he's grown up, and it's, you know, it's a particularly emotive subject to people from Craigan and who've grown up in that environment, you know. But it is funny that, like, funny is the wrong word, but that at this point in James McLean's life, he has ended up, you know, being managed by Michael O'Neill, or someone who has been through aspects of it to a degree, but is probably, you know, just from a short distance away, but has experienced a different life in aspects of it, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, we've talked about it plenty of times before. I suspect we'll talk about it plenty of times again. And it's hard to hit on any grand resolution or, you know, what's the conclusion? It's terrible, and it's probably going to continue, unfortunately. And that's where it's been for the last 9-10 years of his career, which is such a pity. Like, he should have had a, you know, the most wonderful life, stress-free, away from all this crap. And, you know, he's got the winning lottery ticket, professional footballer. And instead, it's been mired in this stuff. Like, his wife sent a message to one of their two social media accounts pretty much every day.
Yeah, no, I know. And it's, I think, like, you know, there's obviously, I think from his perspective, there'd probably be a lot of, like, pride in what he's done in his football career. But obviously, this is sort of something that's running tandem with it. Now, at the same time, like, I still think, you know, he will eventually, whenever he retires, whatever he does, you know, after football, like, I still think he'll be able to go home and be very confident and feel happy that he stood by his beliefs all the time. And it does seem like maybe there might be others who have some regrets that they didn't have the convictions that he did on occasion. Mm. But obviously, he's had to pay a price for that too. And in some respects, it'll be different personality types might assess that equation in different ways. Like, he's been very true to himself, but others would say, at what price? You know, and that's obviously that's where principle comes down to it. And I'm sure in time, I'd love all his Irish teammates. I think I'd love them in with the passing of time, probably when they're not playing. I think that's when you have the best discussion with them. Let's be honest, you know, while they're still playing, I'm not sure if they're all going to go there. Like, David Motter is retired. You know, Kevin Caban spoke about it, obviously, about how he would maybe choose not to wear the poppy, but Irish lads go along with it. You'd be very interested to when all his generational players all retire, what they all have to say. Mm. And would they have done certain things differently at times.
Okay. Liverpool still 2-0 up away to Leipzig, 82 minutes on the clock. Meanwhile, at the Nou Camp, Barcelona 1, PSG 3 is the latest. So PSG have taken control of this game after going a goal down to a Lionel Messi penalty on 27 minutes. Mbappe had equalised before half time, and now on 65 minutes, Mbappe has scored again to make it 2-1. And 5 minutes later, Moise Kean made it 3-1. So about 8 minutes to go there. It's PSG 3-1 up at the Nou Camp. Back in one sec.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Champions League nights on Off the Ball. Bigger than Zlatan's ego. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome back. So still Leipzig 0, Liverpool 2. And still, in fact, it has just changed. It's now PSG 4, Barcelona 1. This is turning into, well, I was about to say decisive, but I don't want to jinx myself based on 2017, but it's looking ominous for Barcelona. It's a very different Barcelona in 2021. They're now 4-1 down. Mbappe has scored a hat-trick. Big nights, big players and all that. So Mbappe has scored in the 85th minute to put PSG 4-1 up at the Nou Camp. Liverpool still 2-0 up away to Leipzig. Meanwhile, just to mark your card, interesting times in Serie A. Juve in action tomorrow in the Champions League, but they're still struggling domestically. They are in fourth spot. They are 8 points behind Inter. AC Milan are 1 point behind Inter, first against second this weekend in Serie A. So it's proving to be a very interesting season, to say the least. Very happy to say Nicky Bandini of The Guardian and ESPN and elsewhere is with us. Nicky, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Yeah, we're very good. We're very good. So it has been an interesting season, to say the least. Inter against Milan this Sunday, first against second. I feel like it's the 80s again.
Yeah, I think it's a thrilling prospect, isn't it, to have the Derby della Madonnina, the not the capital city, but the biggest city in Italy, and the industrial hub of Italy, and the place that has given birth to these two teams that are neither of them quite the most successful team in Italy, because that's been Juventus, but that certainly have been two and three basically in that conversation going back forever, really, and haven't been in the last decade. So it's a thrilling prospect that one of these two could end up ending the run of nine consecutive Juventus titles. And it's even more exciting seeing them go head to head as one and two at the moment.
There's also an interesting cast of characters again. I mean, we're talking about Andrea Pirlo's Juventus, which is, you know, it's fascinating to see how he gets on. We're talking about Conte at Inter Milan. By the way, he's escaped punishment for giving the Juventus president the finger. We've got Zlatan then at 39 doing all sorts of mad things, not least getting into a mad scrap with Lukaku of Inter. So, like, there's a lot to, if you're making a living writing about Italian football right now, there's an interesting group there to pick from.
It's not the worst time to be writing about this league. I would agree with you. Obviously, you haven't even mentioned Ronaldo, who I can't pretend that him showing up was bad for business either. Look, the stuff between Agnelli and Conte the other night, which you're mentioning there with Conte not getting punished for, he showed the middle finger to his former boss, and his former boss, who, I mean, these are men in their 40s going at each other with some quite playground stuff, really, but it does add to this sense of tension and drama. And as you mentioned, Lukaku and Ibrahimovic in the cup only a few weeks ago literally squared up face to face, head to head. Ibrahimovic put his forehead into Lukaku's face and got sent off for it. They've got a mural now outside San Siro. This is how quickly the culture responds. But someone's painted this sort of graffiti style mural that's actually beautiful of the two of them going at it. So there's lots of that. Again, if you want to be nostalgic about it, that sense of the big clubs from the 80s and 90s really feeling that tension of this title race and the Champions League situation.
So how do you see this game on Sunday, and how do you see the title race? Does it now feel as if this is very much Inter versus AC Milan, or are you expecting Juventus to come up on the outside?
I'm not going to rule out Juventus after nine consecutive league titles. I know some people want to. It's a interesting question about how well exactly they're playing, because of course they do have the Champions League game against Porto tomorrow night as well. They have only lost two games so far in this calendar year, Juventus, and those were against Napoli and Inter. They've won every other game that they've played, so they're actually in better form than Milan, for instance, who've lost, I think, four times now this year already. So there's reasons to think that Juventus are stepping forward, but they have ground to make up because they dropped points early in the season against teams like Crotone, Verona, teams you wouldn't expect them to have dropped points against in the past. And to me, there's something psychological as well about the fact that Inter, who are much more than Milan, even though Milan have led the way for most of this season, Inter, who have Conte, who've spent huge amounts of money to bring in the likes of Lukaku, of Ashraf Hakimi, to develop this squad to win a title. The fact that Inter did win the league game against them in January, they now don't have to worry about Europe, so they can focus all energies on the league. To me, psychologically, I think that gives them something of an edge as well. So Juventus aren't the favourites, and that's already shocking to me, but I'm not counting them out in February, no way.
Has it emerged, was there a genuine beef between Zlatan and Lukaku that goes beyond just the realm of heat of the moment out on a pitch?
It's really hard to talk about this without really bringing up exactly the words that were said, which I don't have in front of me, of course.
They were strong.
And Ibrahimovic had this quip about he used the word voodoo, and a lot of people interpreted that very quickly as was this a racist comment? And he's defended himself saying, look, that wasn't what that was about. And there was a story when Lukaku was at Everton, a story that was published in national newspapers about his mother going to speak to a voodoo. Now, Lukaku has rubbished all of that, said it was lies and nonsense. But I think what you definitely do get with Ibrahimovic is he's a stirrer. Like, he loves to stir the pot, and he likes to needle, and he knows what buttons to press sometimes. And I think in his mind, in that moment, he wasn't trying to be nasty, but he was trying to get a reaction, which he did. Perhaps with hindsight, he might think he overstepped the mark. I don't think it's necessarily that the two individuals hate each other. In fact, in the past, they've spoken quite highly of each other. But okay, I do think this conversation has left a bad taste, and it won't wash away, certainly, in time for this derby.
Yeah. What about Pirlo then? What are people making of him as a manager? What's jumping out to you? Is there an early verdict in on his failings or otherwise yet?
He's getting leeway because he's Pirlo, for sure. I think if you compare just in absolutely outright terms where Juventus are now compared to where they were last season under Maurizio Sarri, Sarri was something like 6 points ahead, maybe more than that. And Sarri was not getting anything like the baby gloves treatment that Pirlo has got. So he has got a lot of inbuilt goodwill from who he is. But people are beginning to ask some questions, because he was brought in to develop a project, certainly to bring a more attacking, ambitious style of football was always the idea. You look at the last few games, even ones that they won, like against Roma when they beat them. Roma had 14 shots in that game to Juventus' 3. There was a big reliance on get the ball to Ronaldo and let him fix it, which he did. I think people were hoping that Pirlo would be farther ahead in implementing something more ambitious than that by now. But again, I think he has got still, with fans, more leeway than he would if he was anyone else at all.
And a kind of a broader question about the league then and how it's going. I know there's issues with TV money and the pandemic has really complicated matters. But I mean, if you were to ask the casual football fan who maybe watches mostly Premier League, they obviously know Premier League football. They'd have a sense of La Liga, and it really revolves around the big two there. And the Bundesliga has an identity and its tactical sophistication and all these hotshot young managers and high pressing and all that. I think the maybe uninformed view of Serie A would be, well, it's just not what it used to be, and it's a bit kind of, I'm not too sure what its unique selling point is beyond the tradition and the big names. What's the quality of football like that we're seeing at the moment? Are things on the up? Is there a certain style that's prevalent?
I mean, first of all, I just have to take issue on behalf of everyone in Italy, because I know that I'm half Italian. I know that my Italian family would take great offense to the idea that Germany is tactically innovative and Italy isn't. I mean, Italy will always take great pride in its grooming of managers, the Coverciano manager school, and there are some great managers.
I would offend
right
your Italian family further by saying, defensive type of football, really, you know.
Well, go watch Spezia and Italiano. Wonderfully, his surname is literally Italiano, Italian. What he's doing at Spezia, they play a really intelligent, not gung-ho, which I think they would perceive German football as, but a really intelligent press that against Milan this weekend allowed Spezia, who have the smallest budget in the league, who have the second youngest squad in the league, to upset Milan. I think there is some really clever football played in Serie A. But to answer the broader question, which is probably more important, look, there's not a title race like this anywhere else in Europe, where you have three clubs that are really absolutely in the conversation between Milan, Inter and Juventus. And there's not a Champions League race, I don't think, as intense as what's going on in Italy at the moment, where behind that you have Napoli, Roma, Lazio, all within a couple of points of each other, and all actually not really out of this title race yet. They're all, I think, within 9 points at the most of the title. Some of those teams have game in hand. It's honestly look, of course, we've said it already. Some things are good for business, and it's good for business when people are interested in Serie A. But I think this is the most genuinely excited I've been about Serie A in probably most of the last 9 years. Yeah. So if you're not watching it, in my opinion, you're missing out.
Okay, sold. Nikki Bandini, thanks so much.
Anytime.
Great, thanks very much. Ladies and Champions League, it's full-time in Leipzig, Liverpool 2-0 winners, and 4-1 PSG Barcelona into added time now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Champions League nights on Off the Ball. Bigger than Zlatan's ego. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.